Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast, where you will get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside of legal nurse consulting. They will share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with 30 years experience. So, join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's Pat.
This is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast, and today I'm speaking with Jennifer Cunningham. Jennifer joins us today from sunny Southern California, and we are recording this podcast on a topic called Reputation Management, Reputation Repair. Jennifer is a reputation repair coach who functions in this unique world. And if you think about what happens when a company or a physician or a hospital or a nursing home is sued, think about the damage to the reputation of the facility of the defendants. When I met Jennifer, I thought she had some insights to bring us related to the impact of litigation and how that becomes important to you as a legal nurse consultant, whether you're working with the plaintiff attorney or with the defense attorney. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to this. Thanks a lot.
I'd like to know about who are the people that you help?
So I help anyone who has had kind of a reputational crisis, and that could be anyone that has experienced slander or defamation, harassment, bullying. It could be someone that maybe got fired unexpectedly and they've, you know, had an emotional trauma. And so there's many different ways that can play out, but those are kind of the parameters of the person that I would be helping.
This is an interesting niche. Tell me, how did you get involved in focusing on reputation?
Well, like many of us who have had, you know, a life experience, sometimes things happen in your own life and that propels you to go, you know, take a next step. So I work in higher education, and several years ago, I guess it's been about 4 or 5 years ago, I had a situation at work where I was a beloved employee of the university I work with, both by the students and by the administration there. And I had part of my work is really making very tough decisions. And so I am involved in making decisions about students and if they've had some disciplinary action. So usually there's someone that's not happy with the decision that I make. And in this particular incident, a group of students went around and publicly, you know, destroyed my reputation around the campus. They hung flyers and they said that I was incompetent and that I needed to be fired. And while the administration of the school supported my actions and said that I, you know, handled everything correctly, it really damaged me emotionally and it affected my health, my relationships, and it really made me want to leave the career. So that is the incident that kind of propelled me to want to help other people. And then as I started researching and paying attention to this, I realized that there are people in many different industries who have these similar experiences. And that's where I just said, you know, I've got to make something positive out of this situation. I can't let this affect me anymore. So that's what the impetus was for me to go in this direction. And I've learned so much and, feel that it's very valuable. And I get that feedback from my clients as well.
I've spent some time teaching student nurses, and I've been just on the edge of this issue when a faculty decides that they need to fail a student. And sometimes that means that the student fails out of the program. Sometimes it means they have to repeat a semester with all the attendant costs. Sometimes the student says he or she's being discriminated against. I know that these are gut-wrenching decisions from the standpoint of the faculty who feel a sense of obligation in the healthcare profession in particular. If faculty pass on students who are not qualified, ultimately it affects the end result of the patient who is getting care from somebody who shouldn't be in the profession, who doesn't have the problem solving or critical thinking skills. So I can only imagine how hard that situation must have been for you and the faculty when that blew up on you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, everyone has so many avenues nowadays to speak their mind. And often, you know, as I've been researching these things, often, you know, without much fact checking, you know, someone can put something out there and say something, and like we're experiencing in the world right now, information is shared. And you know, unless you have a whole day to go through and research where things come from and their sources and their accuracy, you know, many people take things on face value, and when we really shouldn't be, we should be really digging deeper. But that takes a lot of time and energy, and most people just don't have that.
Yes. And another thing that struck me as you were sharing your story is that we have sometimes an opposite issue in the litigation world when a person is sued for medical malpractice or an institution. And until there's some type of a settlement or a judgment, that remains hidden, that fact, that case. It's not discussed. Even the defendant himself or herself is not encouraged to say anything to anyone, maybe a husband or a wife, but that's it. So there's a great deal of effort to protect a reputation, and ill-deserved in some situations, Jennifer, where there are people who leave a trail of destruction in their wake. I'm thinking specifically of healthcare providers. And one hospital doesn't want to tell the next hospital that this person wasn't competent, so they protect a reputation when they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, I'm thinking of the flip side of that, where, you know, a lot of, you know, the research and the reading that I've done has kind of propelled me into this this group regarding whistleblowers. And whistleblowers of organizations are often, you know, good people who want to help this organization do things better and really improve the structures and the processes so that the company can thrive, right? But often the whistleblowers are the ones who get fired and aren't hired again. And, you know, I'm sure that there's some people who, you know, take whistleblowing to an extreme and maybe have their own, you know, personal agenda. But I think that there's a lot of people that really want to help the organization be the best they can. And sometimes those people are the ones that the company lets go. And then other companies are reluctant to hire, when really it should be the exact opposite. They should be inviting these people into their organizations because they know this person is ethical. They're, you know, they're wanting to do the right thing. They're wanting to help my company thrive and be successful. So I understand, you know, where you're the remarks that you made about, you know, a healthcare provider kind of being, you know, protected in a way, which is really, you know, it's unfair. And of course, if they're, you know, if they're innocent and they're being targeted, you know, that's a different thing. But I don't know what the answer to that is how do you, you know, protect somebody's privacy and confidentiality when they're actually, you know, possibly causing much harm to their patients?
It is an ironic situation, isn't it? We have people whose reputations are destroyed unfairly and people whose reputations are protected unfairly. And somewhere in the middle is a solution that is reasonable and logical, but I don't have the answer to that one, Jennifer.
Yeah, me either.
Wow. Can you think about some ways in which reputation repair is important for the legal nurse consultants who are listening to this podcast?
Well, you know, knowing a little bit about the work that you've described is, I assume that they may be they may be working on with cases that you know have situations where the person that they're defending or they're helping is going through their own, you know, emotional crisis, and that could be affecting, you know, it could be affecting the outcome of their case. It could certainly be affecting the patients that they work with or the organization that they work within. So I think that, you know, a nurse practitioner who may come across someone like this, even though it may not be in their scope of what they normally would do, is to counsel that person and you know, let them or encourage them to get help on that emotional piece. Encourage, you know, a therapist or a coach or someone else that, you know, or just to rely on their support group. But, you know, as I often say in, you know, some of my marketing material is even, you know, friends and family start growing weary of hearing their loved one, you know, reiterate the same story over and over again. It becomes tiring. And no matter how much you care about that person, hearing them be in distress can take its toll, and they just want that person back. They just want the, you know, their wife or their sister or their, you know, their mother back in their lives. And they, it's difficult for someone to take on all of the emotion that many people go through when they're being accused of something, or, you know, I can see obviously on the flip side, or, you know, I hate to use the word guilty of something, but same emotions. But, you know, either way, it's important to get support. Mm-hmm. You know, I think some of these situations are so distressful for people, you know, that may lead people to suicide. So, you know, when I think about my own work, I think, you know, yes, I'm helping in this kind of, you know, maybe surface way, but I also think in a very deep way, you know, I could be saving someone from hurting themselves. So that's why I take this work very seriously.
Mm-hmm. There was a study.
Answered a question there, but yes. Kind of rambled, but yeah.
Some time ago, I read a research study that showed that once a physician was named in a medical malpractice suit, the risk of making errors increased for a period of time after being named. And it could potentially relate to the emotional trauma that you're describing. Healthcare providers go into this line of profession because they want to help people, and they are conscientious and dedicated and spend long hours and give up much of the quality of their life, particularly the physicians who I can remember would make rounds on the weekend with a very bored 8-year-old or 10-year-old in tow who sat down at the nurse's station with a coloring book while daddy went out and made rounds. It was usually always a daddy for some reason. All of those things go into dedication. So when somebody accuses a healthcare provider of malpractice, it's shattering to the ego, it's shattering to the reputation. And along with that, Jennifer, is the very real concern that the person will try to cover up what happened to protect the reputation. Before they would even get to the reputation repair, then that opens up a whole new area of problems, because it's very difficult to change medical records and get away with it now, particularly with electronic medical records, where every keystroke that you and I make is being tracked. So anything that's deleted, changed, inserted can show up in an audit of those records. So we have on the one hand, another dichotomy that we want to protect the reputation and repair the reputation, but the reputation becomes so important that the healthcare provider will do things that make it even worse on top of the injury that occurred to begin with.
It's so much of this just, snowballs, and it can really get people into lots of trouble.
And then there's the whole question of, you talked about in your situation, people were putting up posters around campus. Today, they could be going on social media and sharing their dissatisfaction with something that a faculty member did. Can you comment about the role of social media in this type of field that you're involved in?
Sure. I mean, it makes things, go viral so quickly. And now there's even sites like, Rate Your Professor, where students can go on and give their professor a rating. And, when that first came out, students were saying horrible things about their professors. Maybe they didn't get a good grade, and then they would say that the professor, didn't know what they were doing. Now there's a little bit more rules and guidelines around what is possible to post. But, so you have sites like that are specifically there to give feedback on a certain person. And the person just, that becomes then their question. Do you respond to that when someone's, questioning your competence, or do you just let it ride out and do nothing? And, there's that quote by, it's been attributed to different people, but something to the effect of, a rumor can go around the world faster than the truth can put on its pants. And it's so true in today's era where, things just spread like wildfire. I think of this this woman, one of, the first targets or victims of this. This woman, her name is Justine Sacco, and she worked for a PR firm, and she was taking a trip to a humanitarian trip to Africa. And she was on boarding her flight, and she got on Twitter one last time, and she said, "I'm going to Africa. Hope I don't get AIDS. Just kidding." And that was her post. And she turned off her phone. And when she arrived in Africa, it had gotten hundreds of thousands of views. She got off the plane. She didn't have a job. Her PR firm fired her because of this post, and it really ruined her life. I don't know what she's doing now, but it really, just one stupid comment ruined her life. And then as I was reading about her and her situation, what she described was, if I could see where people on the surface would read that comment and say, how horrible, you're making fun of people in Africa that have this horrible disease. But if you knew Justine Sacco, you would know that that is exactly why she was headed to Africa, to help people with AIDS. And of course, that part of the story never got shared because, it was more sensational that this stupid, PR lady from New York City made a really bad comment that, got her in a lot of trouble. So, and we hear about those things every day. So I think social media is, in fact, I'm not to plug, but I'm doing a little workshop on March 9th about how to, disagree with style, particularly online. And what it looks at is our motivations for why we post things. Do we want attention? Do we want to be provocative? Do we just not think how this is going to affect someone? So I think that social media, for all the good it can do, there's these horror stories that are, really becoming way too common.
I think I read a story like that. It was probably about 3 or 4 years ago. There was a man who was flying to Nashville to meet with FedEx executives, and he tweeted before he got on the plane that he was going to Nashville. It was a little hick town, or words to that effect, some disparaging comment about Nashville. And then he got off the plane and he walked into the conference room and the FedEx executives were staring at him and glaring at him. And it turned into this big frosty reaction to his comment about a city that they happened to love.
Yeah.
And appreciate being referred to in that way.
Yeah. We, you know, I don't think any of us can be too careful, but then it begs the question, you know, where do we stop? Do we just, silence and censure ourselves all the time so that we don't, you know, get in trouble, or that we don't say anything provocative enough to, that might, you know, offend someone? Do we all just keep our mouths shut? There was another quote that I read recently that said, do nothing, say nothing, be nothing. So basically, if you're not willing to, you know, take that risk sometimes and say what you need to say, you're just, you know, not that you're not a worthy human being, but, you know, what if all of us did that? What if nobody, you know, spoke their truth? So it's a double-edged sword. And I don't think you can be too careful. But then on the other hand, at some point, you know, you've got to just say, hey, if this is what I need to tell the world, then I'm going to say it. And of course that, you know, that doesn't necessarily fit what your folks are going through and what the legal nurses are dealing with. That's a whole different thing, healthcare, you know, because lives are really, you know, affected at a very basic level.
Yeah, we're getting into some areas that have murky answers, Jennifer.
Yes.
And I think it became even murkier during the presidential elections, with friendships and relationships and family ties that were strained because of opposing views. I kept a very low profile.
You're smart.
I said, but I did post one post, and boy, you know, when I got felt like I was getting pushed and I couldn't keep my fingers off the keyboard anymore. And there were some people who violently disagreed with what I posted. And then I took my fingers off the keyboard and said, you know what, Pat, no matter what you believe, you need to just back off and quiet yourself down, no matter how frustrated you are. I think as a culture, the United States, and I'm sure for listeners in other parts of the world, there's a re-examination of the role of social media, the ability to use those tools responsibly or irresponsibly.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. A rethinking of the power, not just in the reputation world, but in if they are tools that can be used for evil or for good. And we saw some extreme examples of that in the months leading up to the election day and in the months leading after the election day up through the inauguration of the President of the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. And it almost just seems like, you know, where we get our news, the sources we choose for our news are really what, you know, becomes our reality. And like I, you know, mentioned at the very beginning, to really dig for the truth takes so much time. And, you know, we used to rely on our journalists to, you know, dig deep. And I think there are still great, you know, investigative journalists out there that do that. But more and more, you know, news is just commentary and depends on who owns the news station, which dictates the, you know, the news that we get. It's a very strange world.
It is. And for people who are older or more mature, we grew up in a time when the news was the news. There was no slant. If there was the fire that broke out in Brooklyn and it killed 17 people in the apartment building, that was a piece of news. We didn't think about that news being reported in a slant. So that's different. Going back to the reputation management piece, as a reputation coach, can you share some strategies, having gone through this searing experience that you had when you were in a faculty position, What are some of the things that people can do now when their reputation has been tarnished in the way that you're describing?
So several things. So, you know, on there's some practical things. So, you know, along the lines of social media, there are online reputation management companies who can, if your name has been, you know, slandered on a website, for instance, there are reputation management companies who will help people bury that information as you build up your reputation in a positive way. And those, you know, there's probably about 30 or 40 of those firms that exist. You can Google it. So if you're looking for that kind of help, you know, that's out there. I have an understanding of that, but I don't help people in that way. So really what I'm helping people is that supportive emotional piece so that they can regain their confidence. So along those lines, you know, I think the first step is to talk about it. And you have to talk about it. If you've ever been in this situation, you have to talk it out. If you keep it all bottled up inside, it's just going to eat you alive. So, you know, for me, it started with talking to, you know, first my husband and then my friends and my colleagues. But as I mentioned, you know, it helped me work through it, but everybody just wanted me to be happy again. And quicker.
Jennifer, come on, get over it, Jennifer.
Exactly. Quicker than I, you know, wanted to. So I think you need to do that, but then maybe you need to recognize, okay, the people around me can't contain this anymore. I can't rely on them solely to be the container. So another outlet, of course, you know, and these are all kind of tips that I think any, you know, therapist would probably give too. Write about it, you know, write it all out. How did it make you feel? You know, what were the injustices done? What would you say to the person if they were standing in front of you? You know, get all of that out and on paper. That can be really therapeutic. And the other thing that I suggest is to, like I did, learn about what's happening. Learn about, slander and defamation, and learn about, people being wrongly accused and how they handled it and other people. And as kind of as strange as that sounds, when I started learning about other people whose reputations were damaged, I realized, wow, I really didn't have that big of a ordeal when I think of some of these people and their whole lives were just completely uprooted. I mean, I kept my job and I flourished in my job and, you know, no one ever apologized to me, but I was able to move through it and, you know, just kind of put it in perspective as time went on. And then I think, you know, the other piece is to reframe it. Is there something about this experience that you can take away from it and say, you know what, maybe there was a little bit of good that happened to this. So for example, what if, you know, out of this situation, you got fired from your job and that made it so that you could spend more time at home with your family. So one bad thing happened, right? But if you're able to reframe it and say, hey, if I didn't lose my job, then I would have never been able to see, you know, my grandkids being born or, you know, my daughter graduate from university or, you know, whatever it is. So if you can reframe it, or maybe that situation propels you into getting a new or better job that you are happier in. And then I think too, you know, just getting your body moving, you know, do things that help you relax, all of the things that anybody would recommend, right? Coaching, meditation, exercise, eating right, you know, all of those healthy things. And then, just, you know, the last thing is really to take an inventory on yourself. And, you know, I think it's really helpful for people to, you know, make a list of all of the things they've accomplished in their life. And when you start thinking about those things, I think most people are really amazed by how much they have accomplished. So for instance, for the people that your nurse, your legal nurses are working with, they may have, completed medical or nursing school, right? Or they have a health degree, or, you know, maybe they had a thriving practice at one point, which is a success. It may not be where they are now, but they at one time had that. Maybe they have successful marriages, or maybe they, you know, are the best mom in the world or the best dad in the world. So if you kind of help, you know, try to help people see the things that they have accomplished rather than focusing on this, just this one thing right in front of them. I think mm-hmm. that can help. And then, you know, I like to joke around. My last tip is to seek revenge. And of course, I'm kidding there. But what I mean by that is kind of along the lines of writing it out. You know, write that letter, write that angry letter to whoever it is that, you know, hurt you or whatever, maybe it's an organization that hurt you. And just write out everything that you feel and read it over and then rip it up and mm-hmm. don't send it. mm-hmm. So because there is that anger that we want to, you know, honor too. We just don't want to act on it.
No, you probably grew up as I did with the expression of don't burn your bridges. And it is so tempting to take out the gasoline and leave a path of destruction. I had an employee who did that, who was very angry with me because I wouldn't give her a raise when she demanded one. And she cost me about $10,000 in fines and fees because of the anger that she let loose. And mm-hmm. she knew where we were vulnerable.
Yeah.
If she ever came back to me, which she never did, for a job recommendation as a letter of recommendation, there would be absolutely nothing I would have done to help her after the way that she burned her bridges on the way out.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, but you probably would have before that, right? If she resigned and said, you know, I need to move on. If you're not going to give me a raise, you probably would have said, let me, you know, please have your people call me.
She was a good employee. She worked with me for 10 years. She was very productive for the company. And this is just an aside. One of my employees was handling the payroll and went to lunch, and she left out on her desk all the payroll information and walked out of the building. And this employee, the one who became so angry, wandered over, found out that she was making less money than the woman doing the payroll. She felt she was entitled to more. I had a whole series of reasons why they were not equal in terms of parity, in terms of the number of years they had worked for the company. But she, my troubled, disgruntled employee, decided, yes, I have to be paid more. And Pat, you will pay me more. And when people come and get in my face, Jennifer, and say, you will do this. Oh, the Irish gene in me goes, I don't think so. No, you're not going to dictate to me what I'm going to pay you. Mm-mm. So that approach didn't work.
That makes me think of two people that are so angry about any injustice or sometimes perceived injustice that they're willing to, you know, spend many years and thousands of dollars trying to fight it. And in the meantime, you know, they're losing so much of themselves and their lives and their relationships and their health and everything. And at some time, you know, the question might be, you know, is all of this worth it? You know, when do I say enough? I'm tired of fighting. I need to move on. Some people can do that quickly. Some, you know, takes a little bit more time, but hopefully they come to that. And I'm not saying that, you know, people shouldn't sue if that's the right avenue, but to really hang on to that and just, you know, keep trudging through it. And, you know, people, you know, lose entire, you know, they lose their life savings, they lose everything in trying to fight some of these things.
Yeah, that's a valid point, Jennifer. There are some people who are so angry by the wrong that they have experienced that they would really like to take the license of the doctor or the nurse and get it shredded. Mm-hmm. And filing a lawsuit can only bring them one form of compensation. It can't bring them anything other than money.
Right.
It can bring them vindication, mm-hmm. but they have to sustain that anger and that momentum for an average of 3 to 5 years, and probably longer now, because lawsuits are not being resolved in courts for the last year. There's the beginning of virtual trials, but there are not mm-hmm. that many, and only a few places where they are occurring. So mm-hmm. if a person's waiting for my day in court, they can wait a long time right now in 2021.
Yeah. And, you know, and maybe the, you know, the solution is at least to do it side by side where, you know, you have been wrongly, you know, affected by someone's incompetence or misjudgment or whatever. And okay, that person needs to be held accountable, right? But there needs to be maybe a parallel process where you're still, you know, not letting the situation ruin, you know, the other parts of your life that may be important to you.
Mm-hmm. How can our listeners find out more about you, your services, what you offer, Jennifer?
Thank you. I offer, you know, individual coaching and training for, you know, organizations, and my website is reputationrepaircoach.com. I have my email, jcjenniferkenningham@reputationrepaircoach.com. It's a lot to type in, but that's where, you know, the easiest place that you can reach me. And I do have a Facebook group that is started where people can discuss and engage on this topic. And it's called Confidence After Crisis. And there's a little tagline that goes on that I won't say on air, but basically it's confidence after crisis. It's not that bad. That's where I'm hoping to grow a community of people that are interested in this subject and can talk and discuss ideas and get resources and help.
Thank you, Jennifer. I think you've shared a lot of good tips in this program and brought to light something that we don't think about that often, which is the impact on somebody who has been either fairly accused or unfairly accused, and what that means to the person emotionally and their reputation, and in some cases, their license and their business and a variety of other impacts. It's comforting to know that there are people like you who are available to help people who've been devastated by some of these types of incidents and the repercussions.
Yeah, thank you. And if I could just say one last word, you know, I am not a licensed therapist. I have a master's degree in counseling, but I am not licensed in the state to do therapy. And there's a little bit of a distinction, you know, so when I meet with a client, everyone gets a free, you know, consultation to see if it's a right fit for us to work together. And if someone is, you know, experiencing something so painful that it's not something that I can manage, then I will not work with that person. And, you know, especially if someone is like suicidal, I would never work with a suicidal person. But I really, you know, the people that get the most help from me working with them are really people who have kind of made the turn in their head, like, okay, I need to move beyond this. I need to move forward. It's time.
Thank you. I appreciate that last tip. And that's an important distinction as well.
Thank you.
I appreciate you being on the show. And I appreciate the person who is watching this on our YouTube channel, Legal Nurse Business, or listening on Spotify or on Apple Podcast or Google Play or Alexa, who's called up this podcast, or watching this through our app, BizEdu, which you can get on legalnursebusiness.com. Be sure to come back next week for a new show, or click on down to be able to get wisdom and tips from our next guest speaker. Thanks so much. Hi, this is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast. I just finished talking with Lee Atherton, who is a chaplain who works with first responders. Lee, can you give our listener a little taste of what we covered in your podcast?
Sure. We talked a bit about what our first responders experience when they first arrive on scene of a traumatic accident. and how it's much, much more than I even realized in the past, although I've been on scenes with them. We talked about how I, as a fire chaplain, can support them and other resources out there, teams of support that can be there for them.
And you will learn in this podcast about Lee's secret helper and the qualities of her dog, who is a crisis response dog. Thank you. You'll be amazed at what this dog is able to pick up and how this dog can assist people who are experiencing some of the after effects of having been involved in a traumatic situation. So be sure to come back to Legal Nurse Podcast to hear Lee Atherton talk in her show. Thanks so much.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on legalnursebusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at lncacademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Join our community to get notified of each new episode and to receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. We appreciate you and your interest.